Good morning. I'm Eric Rice. I'm an assistant professor in the School of Social Work at USC, and I have become very interested over the last several years in HIV risk among homeless youth, and in particular, how their use of the internet and social networking technologies is playing into their HIV risk and resilience. So I think the best way to start this topic off is to really talk about some of the things that we know about housed adolescents and their internet use, which is basically that it's ubiquitous. And that really we have this new move towards social media that's adolescents' use of the internet is primarily about Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and these other interactive social networking media. And even though in the research that was done in the early part of the 2000s that was really addressing issues in the 90s that was really concerned with sexual predation and young people basically being exposed to inappropriate, i.e. porn content online, has really, those issues are still there a little bit, but they've been kind of superseded by these new sets of issues where parents are now concerned about what's going on with all of this social networking, and is there an opportunity for their children to be engaging in high-risk relationships, being exposed to inappropriate peers that they're meeting online. And there's really been a lot of very interesting work about normative adolescent sexuality and development that's been looking particularly at these ideas about how identity and sexual identity are being developed online in adolescence now. So there's a lot of the sort of presentation of self that you might have imagined going on in high schools is not just going on in the halls of high schools, but it's now going on people's Facebook pages. So you post up a picture of yourself being, you know, kind of scantily dressed or wearing, you know, your punk rock gear today, or now you're looking hip hop or whatever it is that you want to be presenting yourself as. You have this whole new set of opportunities to do that online. Well, when it comes to high-risk adolescents, which since you know we're all here to talk about HIV risk among adolescents, presumably is what you're interested in hearing about, we actually know far, far, far less. I mean, some of the little research that we do know seems to indicate that young people who have suffered from abuse or neglect in their early adolescence are more prone to sexual predation online. But again, these are studies that are really kind of chasing older trends and not really focusing so much on this newer use of social media. I, in particular, am interested in homeless adolescents, and my interest in homeless adolescents predates my interest in the internet. And homeless adolescents in terms of HIV risk are extremely high risk. I mean, they're not as high risk as transgender youth that we heard about earlier today, but still the prevalence rates are between 2% and 11% depending on the city. And it's endemic, you know. One of the things that's very interesting about HIV risk among homeless youth is that over and over and over and over and over again, social network processes are implicated in HIV risk. So basically the idea is homeless young people, when they run away from home or they're thrown out of their houses, they find themselves in these street-based communities that are filled with other young people from these similarly dysfunctional families. There's a lot of substance use. There's a lot of high-risk sexual behavior that's going on, oftentimes as part of survival strategies, and that because they're forming social networks that are made up primarily of other street-based youth, all of these risky behaviors are normalized. Well, some of the work that I had been doing over the last few years has been looking at the idea that there are not just risk-taking peers in the lives of homeless youth, but there's also pro-social peers and sources of resilience among homeless youth. And if you spend any time with homeless youth face-to-face, you'll very quickly come to the realization that, oh, hey, a lot of these are good kids. And so the story of risk isn't the only story, even though it certainly is well empirically not validated, but there's lots of empirical evidence that suggests this network process and the normalization of risk is a very real phenomenon, but it's not the only phenomenon that's going on. So part of why I became so interested in social networking technology is that I was talking with homeless youth in some qualitative open-ended interviews that predate the study that I'm going to present this morning. And I was talking with them about, well, who are your positive influences? And what I was hearing over and over and over and over again in these qualitative interviews was that young people would tell me, either their brother, their mother, some family member, or their best friend from home that they'd grown up with was this positive source of support, of resilience, of healthy influences in their behaviors. And I would, like the slightly too old person that I am, I would say to them, well, what do you mean? You have told me you haven't seen them for 2 years. How can you possibly be talking to them every day? And they looked at me like I was from Mars and said, Facebook, MySpace, you idiot. And so I said, okay, we got to do a study about this. So what I did was I did this technology use survey, and it's a convenient sample. I mean, this is really preliminary data, but I think you'll see that it's very compelling nonetheless. I went to a single drop-in agency in Hollywood, California, which serves a spectrum of street living youth. So we've got young people that are in housing programs, transitional living situations. Young people access this drop-in center that are in temporary housing situations, so they're couch surfing, they're staying with a relative for a few days, a friend. And then there's also young people who are actively sleeping under bridges or in abandoned buildings or riding the buses around all night. This was a computer-assisted self-interview so that it would maximize the honesty of their responses. Here's a little bit of the demographics. In Los Angeles, most homeless youth are either African American or white. There's a fairly large number of Latinos and mixed race folks as well. Most of the homeless youth it's disproportionately male. There's a small, very high risk group of transgender folks. Unfortunately for this study, I don't have very many of them, but they're really an interesting group nonetheless. And then in terms of sexual orientation, you can see that it's predominantly heterosexual, but there's a lot of gay, lesbian, bisexual, or unidentified or unsure sexual orientation. So the first question that I really wanted to ask was, okay, if these young people are telling me all about these best friends that they're getting in touch with online, so how often are you getting online? So what you can see here is that if you were to add the bars moving from once a week over, that's going to end up being 84% of the population said that they were, or the sample said that they were getting online at least once a week. And if you add up almost every day on to the right, you get about 50%. And then if you look at more than 1 hour a day, you get 24%. So even though I think this is a lot less than you would expect, you know, particularly the more than 1 hour a day, so for normal, for housed adolescents, you would expect that number to be much higher, but I think it's striking that you have, you know, 85% or so of the population is getting online at least once a week. So then the next question for me became, well, how are you getting online? And so the answer turns out to be, I think, once you see the data fairly obvious, they're going to the public library. I mean, these folks are homeless. They don't have homes. Most of them don't have personal computers. They are dependent on publicly available computing. So they go to the public library. So this was actually a check all that apply sort of question. So these aren't going to sum up to 100. And so public library was the most frequently endorsed. Youth service agency was nearly a third. There's also a fairly large number of folks who are going to internet cafes or friends' house or using their cell phone. So one of the things that's really interesting is that I have data from the same survey that shows that about 40% of young people have a cell phone that's got functioning minutes, and then another 20% have a cell phone that their minutes are out. But if you think about, you know, if you've got, you know, an iPhone or an iTouch or something like this, which a lot of these homeless youth do because they're cool and they like their adolescence, they want to be cool, you have free Wi-Fi. So if you show up at Starbucks, you can get online. So that's where a lot of this internet cafe comes in. So for me, because of my interest in social networks, I really wanted to know, well, who are you connecting with? And here what I found was that the most frequently endorsed group is this fourth bar over, which is the friends or associates you knew from home before you came to Hollywood. This language of or associates is the way that the young people like to refer to their acquaintances. They don't like the word acquaintance, they like associate. And then any family member is more than 40%. Friends that you know from the streets of Hollywood is about 40%, and then people that you meet online is also about 40%. So they're using this technology to connect with a whole wide array of different types of social network ties. Okay, so we're here to talk about HIV risk. So this is all very interesting, Eric, but what does this have to do with the price of fish unless it's tied to HIV risk? So I looked at a number of different HIV risk-taking activities and tried to look at sort of a diversity of things. So one, I wanted to look at online partner seeking because there's certainly been some emerging trends in people's, at least commentary on the internet about the fact that lots of young people are looking for sex partners online, and so I wanted to look at that. I also wanted to look at exchange sex, which is really the most risky thing that homeless youth do is be involved in exchange sex. And then I also wanted to look at least one thing that was that had a positive outcome so I could maybe tap into some of these resilience issues. So I looked at, you know, have you gotten a HIV test in the last 6 months? I looked at a few other variables as well that didn't turn out to have quite as strong associations. So this is not just an a priori list. This is partly a little bit of data mining on my part, but not too much. So what I found out was a few trends that I thought were really, really very interesting. So this first model here where we're looking at who is picking, who's looking for partners online, what you can see here is that there's this enormous association with exchange sex. So basically what this means is that the young people who are engaging in survival sex, so they're having sex for money or a place to stay or drugs, they're finding their partners online. The next piece that I think is really interesting is when you look at exchange sex and you look at who they're connecting with online and how that might be related to this exchange sex behavior. You can see that the young people who were who endorsed having street peers as a primary source of online interactions, they were more likely to be involved in exchange sex. Whereas young people who indicated they had at least any family member that they were connecting with had a significant reduction in their likelihood of reporting having been involved in exchange sex. And likewise, when we go to move to look at recent HIV testing, you can see this positive influence again of connecting to your family, where you have 2.5 times more likely to report having had this recent HIV test, and connecting to these home-based peers. So this is the best friend from home that they kept telling me about in the qualitative interviews, that you were twice as likely to have this recent HIV test. So in some ways, I think that this data, because it is preliminary, I mean, I have a convenient sample, it's a nice sort of representation of the kinds of street youth that are in Los Angeles, but it's certainly, you know, one must acknowledge that it is a convenient sample. And also the data itself is really, in some ways, kind of crude. I mean, as I've gotten into the process of analyzing this data and starting to publish from this data, I feel like there's a lot, this has opened up more questions for me than it's maybe answered. But I think that one of the most important pieces here is this idea that these pro-social ties to home are really being facilitated by the internet. So you've got this tension going on where you've got face-to-face street peers that are this source of risk, and then you've got these home-based peers and family members that you're connecting with basically through social networking technologies, and that's helping you stay healthy. And I think that playing with that dynamic and realizing that the connecting out and connecting to home is this source of resilience is something that we as folks who are thinking about public health interventions should really be moving towards. I think one of the simple implications of this work is that we ought to increase internet access for homeless youth. I mean, if what they're doing, and I have other data that shows that the more time they spend online, the more likely they are to look for sexual health information, the more likely they're looking for housing, I mean, all kinds of positive things. So the internet is widely being used in instrumental ways, being used to connect to positive peers, positive family members, and so we should increase their internet access. The one caveat to this that I have to stress is this issue about exchange sex and looking for partners online. So fortunately, for us, if you were to increase internet access at, say, youth service agencies for homeless youth and you were running a computer lab and you wanted to be monitoring it and making sure that they weren't getting online and soliciting sex, there's really two ways that young people are doing that. Either they're getting on Craigslist, so you see them pop up on Craigslist and you want to kind of go and check out, say, are you looking for a place to live or are you looking for something else? And the other thing is that they're getting onto these websites like Adam for Adam or Sugar Daddy or not so much Manhunt, that's a little bit older for them, but basically, well, as soon as those sites come up, it's just porn everywhere. And so if you're running one of these if you're running a computer lab, which I've done, and it's pretty easy to see, oh, hey, you're on Adam for Adam now. Hey, what you doing? And it's a good point to have a harm reduction conversation to figure out, you know, what's your purpose for being on this site? Are you just looking for somebody to date? Or are you looking to, you know, be involved in something that's exchange sex? And if it's either one of those things, are you, you know, what's your condom access like? You know, where are you going to be going? It's a good harm reduction moment. So I think that we should not be afraid to give them internet access. We should just be thoughtful about how we're chaperoning it, I guess, so to speak. And then the last thing, and this is probably the place where I have kind of the most excitement, but maybe the fewest answers, is this idea about new prevention programs. So I think that since these young people are getting online as much as they are, and homeless youth in particular are this very transient population, they're hard to engage in services over a long period of time. I think the fact that they're getting online at least once a week on a very regular basis gives us a whole opportunity to reach out to them and keep them involved in programs that we might not have had previously. And I think it's something that we should be exploring with in much, you know, in greater depth and detail. Great. And that's that. I just want to acknowledge my, got a lot of funding from NIMH, and also to thank my community partners in Hollywood, My Friend's Place, and of course the youth of Hollywood who participated in my study. Thanks.